It is the Better Up Podcast for the first real week that we actually get to talk about players playing in baseball for the first time in a long time. Willie P alongside Caleb Johnson and Joe Patrick. Hope you've enjoyed the preamble to the baseball season. The Atlanta Braves, unfortunately, as you get going, have not necessarily enjoyed that part for them. We'll get into it here on the Better Up Podcast. We say hello, Caleb Johnson.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
And hello to Joe Patrick.
Hello.
So, Braves could have had better starts to the return to play situation. You have four guys who test positive for COVID-19, including one of your best in Freddie Freeman, who also has symptoms. And you have two players opt out. This is going to have an effect on the Braves roster, at least to start. I think it would be ambitious to think that Freddie Freeman has recovered from his symptoms by the time we get started a couple of weeks from Friday. But I'll start with Caleb. You know, I think this is something that we all kind of thought was a risk, and you know, people were talking about whether or not you have a season or not because of all the financial issues. But now it seems like people are starting to react negatively to all the stuff that we've been seeing in the news, especially when it comes to the Braves having as many tests positive as they did.
So it is one of those things where we are now seeing people, whether it's Braves players or Braves fans or just fans of the game in general, wake up a little bit and realize how serious this thing is. It is partially strange to me that it has taken this for people to be like, oh, wow, this thing really needs to be taken seriously. But at the same time, for the players themselves, I have some understanding of why it has come to me physically going to my job and seeing how much has changed and how we've still not really figured this thing out. And so, as far as when it comes to the guys, those, you know, Markakis and Felix Hernandez who have opted out, I can't blame them because they aren't stuck having to work. They've made their money in the past, even though, you know, it's not all financial, but they've made their money in the past. And so they've got to focus on their health. And I think that is the one thing that, obviously, we're a Braves podcast, and so we're going to talk about the nitty-gritty of figuring out what to do once these guys, you know, now that these guys are gone. But these guys are, they're people. They're real people. They're Americans who are trying to figure out amongst this virus that hasn't gotten any better in our country.
Something that's been interesting to me to hear kind of what they've been saying in these press conferences is that they admit that they didn't really understand what it was going to be like until you actually get in the building and experience it for yourself. So, like, when it comes to doing all these safety protocols, having the test done, having things spaced out, having to wash your hands, having to have your own bag of baseballs to bring around, all this stuff, everything in those 113 pages might sound fine and well when you're reading it in a document, but then when you actually have to go live that experience, I think it hits you a different way. And that's kind of like a lot of what I got from talking to, when we got to talk to Nick Markakis, when Brian Snicker talked about Felix Hernandez as well. You know, like, Felix Hernandez came the first day and was, you know, threw aside, you know, and he pitched well. Snit said he chatted with him a little bit and, you know, didn't know. And then later that night, he's opting out because, you know, you just don't know how guys are going to react to these situations. And it's totally human reactions to have.
And of course, when you think about the situation involving Nick Markakis, it takes away a significant bat that you thought might have been a part of the Braves' DH rotation. You mentioned that conversation, Joe, with the reporters and Markakis. There's a little bit of what he had to say about why he was opting out.
You know, I love the game. I love competing every day. But the biggest thing, you know, my decision is, you know, we play this game for the fans. And, you know, to be able to go out there on a daily basis and compete and entertain for them, you know, that's what it's all about. And to have to go out there and not have them part of that. And
so that is sort of something that we were looking at, Joe, as, I don't want to say you kind of had a problem with him saying it this particular way, but I'm wondering, just from your perspective, what about that particular situation did you I guess, have an issue with him saying as far as referencing the fans there as his reason for not playing?
Well, I wouldn't say it's like I have an issue. What I really think is that, and again, he said it, so who knows? Maybe he really does just think that not having fans in the stands really is like so against his idea of baseball that he can't proceed that way. But he did come to the stadium and did want to participate for at least these first couple games when he knew there was these first couple days when he knew there was not going to be baseball. So really how I felt was that, and it's sad, I feel like that is used as a crutch to an extent because guys don't feel fully comfortable admitting that they are so psychologically uncomfortable being there because of the situation that's caused by the virus. And that's sad to me because you wish that guys could feel like they had a opportunity to speak openly and freely and kind of be vulnerable to an extent. And I feel like Markakis has always been one of those guys who doesn't want to show those vulnerabilities, especially like personally and emotionally. So I think that just using the fans there, just to me, it felt like a crutch. It didn't like feel quite right.
I was more just, in my mind, the situation that involves Markakis, like, you're allowed to be selfish. Like, you're allowed to be selfish about this.
Right,
and that's the part of it that I don't get. And I just don't understand why people are just are coming down on him, number one. And number two, why he doesn't feel like he can say, hey, I want to do this to protect myself and my family. Like, not wanting to be sick is a valid concern, no?
So I guess it's interesting that you hit, Will, on the fact of being selfish, because sure, like, this is his life that he has to live. He has a family that he has to worry about, all of these things. And so sure, he gets to be selfish, but I didn't love this answer that he gave when it came to, you know, the fans actually being in the stands, because to me that came off as selfish in a weird way, because fans are still going to be there. They're just going to be at home. They're still going to be watching those games. They're now, sure, they'll miss out on the live aspect, but we're only doing that because we're trying to essentially save as many lives and avoid as much risk as possible. So it seemed oddly selfish that, well, I don't want to play because fans won't be there. Well, you don't put fans into consideration when you're negotiating your contract, or whether it comes to, you know, Joe, you've talked about it before, the Players Association negotiating with the owners. Fans don't really come in to play when it comes to that sort of thing. It's, you know, it's each person against himself. And then how many workers are missing out if the game ends up not being played, that they're financially attached to things where fans are paying to be there. I guess my brain always goes to, and maybe because it somewhat affects me as well, is the workers who are missing out, the ushers, the support staff who aren't able to, you know, make their livelihood because of no fans in the stands. That's what, just the whole thing about fans not being there went into Markakis' decision seemed strange, and I hope it was a cover up. Even though in a weird way, I would wish he could speak his mind freely. It struck me as odd.
Yeah, totally.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's like, it's a convenient crutch to be there for guys who don't want to say how they really feel, you know, and that's sad to me.
But see, yeah, Markakis in the past has felt he's had the ability to speak his mind. I'm trying to remember what the big issue was not that long ago with, was it somebody that got hit by a pitch or something like that? And like, he was Markakis.
I think he was big on the Acuña thing. He had a strong opinion about that.
Yeah, where he was like, you know, essentially we should throw at them or we should fight them kind of deal. Like, I guess in the past I felt like he spoke in his mind freely. This just seemed like a strange thing that I wish he would have expounded on a little bit more.
Well, I think that it's because of the nature of the real fact of the situation, which is that it's like a personal vulnerability that he does not want to expose. You know, he's always been this guy who has this such a hard shell around him.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
And he doesn't want to emit any sort of weakness or or struggles. And this is exactly what that is. And again, it's perfectly understandable. We've all been having our own struggles and going through our own doubts and fears over this virus. So it's totally a human reaction. I don't blame him for deciding to opt out of the season one bit, but it's just the nature of sports. Guys are going to want to be like that in front of the media, and it's just unfortunate.
Of all the things that he did reference, the one that I think was most powerful was the conversation he had with Freddie Freeman after finding out that he had tested positive for COVID-19 and was having the kind of symptoms he was.
I think the biggest thing is I talked to Freddie Freeman the other day, and you know, just hearing the way he sounded on the phone kind of opened my eyes. And, you know, Freddie didn't sound good. You know, I hope he's doing good. I hope he's healthy. I know these guys need him more than anybody. And, you know, just to hear him, the way he sounded on the phone, you know, it was tough. It was kind of eye-opening. And with everything that's going on, you know, not just in baseball, but in the world, it makes you open your eyes. I got three kids that I've missed for, you know, 11 years now.
And that's a little bit from Nick Markakis after he explained his decision to opt out. And that's there's two things that have bothered me with this. Number one, the people who get on, the guys who are opting out, because again, I hate to use the word selfish. I'm not trying to sound callous, but I'm saying it's okay to be selfish. And number two, the people who are connecting a positive test automatically with irresponsibility. From all accounts, and you have to kind of take Freddie at his word here, he made it sound like he was doing all the diligent things, you know, with a family of young children and people in his life that he did not want to risk getting exposure to the virus. He was basically, like I said, doing all the right things. And it just comes again and proves this thing that, again, I say it all the time with the three of us. None of us are epidemiologists, but we read a lot of the same things that everybody else does. And from what I can gather, there are a lot of people doing the right things and being diligent, and they're still getting sick because they're trying to live their lives and curtail any opportunity to get that virus as much as possible. But it still happens.
Yeah, and in Freddie Freeman's case, you know, he had been staying out in California, which is where he's originally from. That's where his off-season house is. And then so he left from California to come back to Atlanta, and then he tests positive in Atlanta. So that positive test essentially means, especially at that point, he wasn't feeling symptoms, and then maybe not harsh symptoms, but then he started feeling them a little bit harsher later. That means to me, and I think medical science would say this, that he contracted the virus sometime recently, right? When he tests positive, before his positive test, probably within 5 to 10 days or so. So it probably could have happened between his move, you know, when you have to do things, go through airports, whatever it is, going from California to Georgia. You know, just when you're in that situation, you're going to have more contact with people. So that potentially is how he got it. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation. And I wrote a little bit about this. I would recommend anybody go read it on 929thegame.com, our website, just about how we kind of react to this. Because every time a positive COVID test comes out, especially when it's a player as popular and important as Freddie Freeman, you get this huge range of responses, especially obviously online, of like on one end of the spectrum, it's, okay, thank God he'll be immune for the course of the season. Or it's on the other end of the spectrum, which is that this is all immoral. We have to shut down the entire thing. This is irresponsible. And so I think there is some sort of middle ground, but you know, it's how we find that middle ground is not necessarily going to be unanimous. Like, everybody's going to have their own thought on it. And Brian Snicker has said, you know, he feels safer at the Braves facility with knowing everybody around him has been tested and that they have all these protocols in place than he does going to the grocery store and getting a gallon of milk. And, you know, all of us are living in an environment where there's some level of risk.
So starting the season for the Braves, you will not be, you will be basically without Freddie Freeman, we assume. And then, of course, the other players tested positive, which are Touki Toussaint, Will Smith and Pete Cosma. Cosma was training with the Satellite Group anyway, so he wasn't necessarily projected to be on the opening 30-man roster. And of course, the two guys who opted out, both Felix Hernandez and Nick Markakis, not on the roster. Caleb, where do we go from here? How does that affect the rotation, the pitching staff, and ultimately, who plays first base to start right now for Atlanta?
First off, I'm glad you asked me specifically about first base because I did a little research this past week to figure out where the Braves will most likely lean, where they might start off in a specific direction and then pivot a little bit. At least I think they will, in my opinion. When it comes to who's going to play, it's the old coaches saying, next man up. You know, it's honestly, that's what it is. It's next man up. However, when you look into... Take out my little handy-dandy notes I've got here.
I like the grovelly voice you did for next man up. That's good. Very coachy.
Yeah.
Next man up.
No, but I mean, how many of the three of us, how many of you have been at a press conference where so-and-so is out for an extended amount of time? Who's going to... next man up mentality.
That's a Will Muschamp special.
Yeah. So, all right. I think you look at four different guys when it comes to playing first base. You have the option of Austin Riley, who we heard Brian Snicker name. He personally named Austin Riley as a guy who played first base in spring. You had Nick Markakis, who you thought that might be a person that they go to. He's no longer there. So then you have Adam Duvall, who we expected to play out in the outfield. And then Johan Camargo, who is obviously kind of that utility guy that goes around. Well, I looked up some statistics, and when it comes to Austin Riley, yes, he did play first base some in spring, although I couldn't find the specific number of times that he played. Maybe someone else can. But as far as playing during the regular season, 2019 being his first full season, he played six games at first base, and he started three of those games. So it's like, okay, he has a little bit of experience there. That makes a little bit of sense. Go over to Johan Camargo. In 2019, Johan Camargo played one game at first base in which he came in... He didn't start the game at first base. He came in to relieve Freddie Freeman. Then you have Adam Duvall, who for the Braves has never played first base, but when he was with the Reds back in 2018, he played 10 games... And he had five starts. And then in his total career, he's played 43 games at first base, 27 starts. So the guy I'm looking to start at first base is Adam Duvall. Because yes, Austin Riley can play the position. But I think you had a plan at the beginning of spring training of what you were going to do with Austin Riley and Johan Camargo. And you should stick with that. And so that is leaving Austin over towards third base or maybe playing some outfield swapping between Johan Camargo. But as far as those first couple of weeks that I expect to have Freddie Freeman out, I just see Adam Duvall as that guy.
Yeah,
O'Brien? No Peter O'Brien for anybody?
Absolutely not.
Name in.
No.
Because that's
no.
My guy.
Stop it.
Thank you for doing that research, Caleb. That is very handy for us. And I agree with you. I think it's either going to be Duvall or Riley. I definitely see Riley just because you want to get him at bats anyway. I do not think, you know, the Braves have Yonder Alonso, who's obviously a first baseman on the roster on this player pool. But I don't see them like trying to squeeze him in just because he's a quote unquote first baseman. Like, what you're going to want to get your best hitters in the lineup, especially you're not going to play somebody who's a natural at first base instead of trying to get a better bat in there.
So that means Riley plays either third base or DH in your mind, guys?
Well, it's interesting because, Brian Snicker going into last season, he had all these big plans for Johan Camargo as being this super utility player, right? He's going to play all these different positions. We've heard this conversation a million times. And Brian Snicker kind of admitted that it was not a good idea. It didn't work out and he sounded like he didn't want to try that again. But I don't know if he has any other option this year with Austin Riley specifically. Like, if he's going to play him and get him regular at bats, I don't see how he's just going to be able to lock him into one position the entire season and be able to like just play him there. I think he's going to have to move around the team. He's going to have to shift guys around quite a bit, and especially if you have a DH and you have a packed schedule like the Braves do have, especially to start the season, you're going to want to shift guys around to be able to utilize the DH, give some guys some days off when they need them in the field, and that would probably require moving some guys around in the field. So I could see Austin Riley playing some first base, some third base. Eventually, Freeman's going to get back, so that first base role is going to get filled. But, you know, there's going to be guys who need to play various positions, you know, day in, day out.
Who is the biggest winner with Felix Hernandez opting out?
Isn't that name pretty obvious?
I just wanted someone else to say it, not me.
I mean, it is Sean Newcomb, and it's weird though. I will say, phrasing it as and obviously, Will, you didn't mean it this way, but phrasing it as like someone being a winner, like this all just really sucks. Because when I was doing Sports Flashes it may have been Monday or Friday, I can't remember. Yeah, it would have had to have been Monday because that was after the news came out. Yeah, my days are blending together with my work schedule. But so I threw out this phrasing of the Braves 2020 World Series hopes took a slight hit. And while that might seem drastic because, well, Felix was, you know, proposed at best to be a fifth man starter. And, you know, Markakis was a role player. You know, not that, but those guys matter. Like, those mm-hmm. things matter, especially when you thought you had them solidified. I mean, Brian Snicker came out, I believe it was Thursday or Friday, and said the decisions that they made in spring or at the end of when they had to split up and you know, shut everything down for the coronavirus, that those decisions he made back then were carrying over to the games that they're getting, you know, this mini summer camp that they're going to play, and then the regular season. So you have to imagine it stayed true that Felix Hernandez was going to be that fifth man, and Brian Snicker and his coaching staff had plans for Sean Newcomb, but now that's all having to shift. So it is Sean Newcomb, I think, will get his wish to be in that starting rotation.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, Sean Newcomb, good. I think he now is in the pole position to kind of be one of those rotation guys. But it's a pretty significant impact for the Braves because it throws off, I think, a lot of the plans they had for this piggybacking situation. You had it as it stood before, it kind of was working out pretty well. Like, you had five starters and three piggybackers who could kind of rotate in. Maybe you would want to have like four guys who could go long, especially early in the season.
But you lost one of those guys too to the virus too, in Touki Toussaint as well.
Yeah. Touki obviously as a former starting pitcher. So yeah, it's really affecting you. I think that, yeah, you know, you talked about Sean Newcomb. I think just generally speaking, this is an opportunity for a lot of these Braves young pitchers. Obviously, we've been talking about Kyle Wright a lot, and he's obviously going to play a role in all this. But even further down the line from him, when you talk about a guy like Bryce Wilson, who mm-hmm. obviously struggled in his time at the majors last year, needs to work on his slider, but he's kind of like a fastball changeup guy who just needs that third pitch to be effective enough for him to make those other two pitches work better.
Joe, you're not ready to give up on him yet?
Yeah, I got one. Somebody tweeted at me saying they never want to see Bryce Wilson pitch in a Braves uniform again after like
four starts.
Yeah. but he has an opportunity. And then also, of course, Ian Anderson, the top pitching prospect in the pipeline. I think that he now has a very realistic chance to pitch himself into contention. He's going to have to do it through impressing coaches, and his best opportunity to do that's going to be in this camp, because his best opportunity is going to be while they have this 30-man roster open. You know, that's going to be the best opportunity for these young guys to get on the roster, but these guys now have a chance.
Well, my biggest question, and I'm glad you brought up Ian Anderson, Joe, is which of those two big prospects, your biggest position player prospect and your biggest pitching prospect, has a bigger impact on this season for the Braves? Is it Ian Anderson or is it Christian Pache?
I think it's Christian Pache. And I've kind of been on this boat now for a few weeks.
Especially
now with the Markakis news, it kind of opens a natural slot in the outfield for someone like him. And again, I keep on going back to his outfield defense, and the Braves, like, he's kind of one of their best options out there as a defensive center fielder. And when you obviously Ender and Ciarte, people always point to the Gold Glove that he won a couple years ago. But honestly, last year, I was not impressed with him in the outfield. Obviously, he had some injury issues early in the season, and then obviously at the tail end of the season. But when he was starting to play more regularly, I just he didn't look the same guy to me in the outfield. He didn't look like he had the same kind of range. He was making some simple mistakes that he hadn't made in the past. And I just think a guy like Pache, in a season like this, where you've got so many opt-outs from so many teams, I just think it's a prime opportunity to get him in the fold and just let him start his career with, honestly, I feel like this is kind of a low-pressure situation this season. So I would love to see him get in the fold, and I think he has a great opportunity to do it now with Markakis out.
Joe, you better watch it there talking about my guy Ender. he's one that I know the play on the field is one thing, but he's always just been like one of the nicest guys as far as in the clubhouse. And for whatever reason, that's just what my brain tends to do when I form opinions about players, is if you're just a kinder person, I am more willing to deal with your ups and downs than if you're a complete jerk. If you're a complete jerk, totally, I'm going to write you off and you're terrible and going to be out of the league, all that kind of stuff. But no, when I do believe you are correct. Because the interesting thing with Christian Pache is I don't know how all of this is going to work with service time, but I don't think Pache would have gotten the service time this season like he's going to get now, which could help him in future contracts and that kind of thing. And it's almost kind of handcuffed the Braves that they don't have a choice but to use him because he's going to be such a great asset and Markakis is gone. So there's the natural void.
Yeah, you can't really fudge with the Super 2 stuff this year because of the fact that, like you said, the service time stuff is going to be a bit peculiar. And I'm curious to see if one or both of them get more opportunities as a result of that. We did get the schedule late last night from Major League Baseball. They will start out in New York taking on the Mets. They will play 7 of their first 11 against New York, 3 at home, and then 4 at Truist Park as part of that opening 6-game homestand, which also includes the Tampa Bay Rays. You get two sets of 2-game series against the Yankees, a pair of 3-game sets against the Boston Red Sox. You see the Nationals for the first time August the 17th, and then you get a big dose of them with seven games in the month of September, and you get the Marlins for a 4-game set also in that stretch. You finish out the season with 7 at home, 4 against Miami, and then the concluding 3 against Boston. What did you guys make of what we saw from the schedule release on Monday?
I'm going to go Mike Francesa again, and that's a win. That's a loss. That's a win. So,
that's a win. That's a loss.
Yeah.
That's a win. That's a loss.
So pulling up the schedule, I don't know if it's naive of me because there's obviously so many different things. I mean, quite honestly, I am in the headspace of we're still 2 weeks away from the season actually getting started. So is this even going to actually happen, or is it all going to blow up in our faces before
don't
we get there?
Don't give me that pessimistic activity
I'm sorry, man. It pops up in the back of my head and it doesn't go away. As far as looking at the schedule itself, it feels very conducive to a successful season, just because, to me anyways, it seems like some of the most difficult games are right there in the middle. Like, it, as much as you can have a quote-unquote light schedule to get started with, I know the Mets are nothing to play with, but at the same time, they aren't the Phillies, and they aren't the Yankees, and they aren't the defending, you know, the defending World Series champs Nationals that is going to take up the bulk of that middle of the schedule. And then I think to end with as many games as you can against the Marlins is a good thing. And then a little tough right there at the end going out with the Red Sox.
The greatest... go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was going to say a couple things that stand out to me that I think are important. The Braves have their first 20 games, they will not have an off day. So that, I think, is important, especially considering these guys are not going to be in the normal game shape that they normally would be in after a regular spring training. So I think that that's important. But it's also important that they end the season with a 7-game homestand against very winnable games against the Marlins and Red Sox. Who knows how the Red Sox are going to be at that point in the season, but you certainly would think that the Marlins would be an easy way to close it out. So, like, kind of like Caleb said, you know, you kind of have things staged in a way for you that you feel like could be conducive, but obviously who knows with all this stuff.
Well, the other thing about the... Because we honestly, we typically think of the Red Sox as this powerhouse. I mean, they just won the World Series a couple years ago, but they are a shell of their former selves. As far as Mookie Betts leaving, David Price leaving, Chris Sale having Tommy John surgery, like, they are not the team on paper that we expected them to be, you know, just towards the end of last season.
The middle part of that schedule is what stands out to me, where you basically get your entire... your entire season that you play the Phillies, you play them basically all in that little 4 to 5 week stretch there throughout August. Then you get the Red Sox in there, your first crack at Washington, and then your pair of two game series against the Yankees. I also look at that long road trip where you have, looks like, 9 games away from Truist Park, 4 at the Phillies, 2 at the Yankees, and 3 at the Marlins. And I'm not necessarily saying that the Marlins thing is tough. It's just that comes at the end of that stretch that Joe mentioned that has the 20 games without an off day. You finally get that off day and the travel day going from Yankee Stadium to Miami. But by that point, you could possibly lose one or two of those Marlin games just because of, you know, attrition and fatigue.
Or injuries. Like, that's also that's the one thing. Now, granted, we have, you know, guys that are opting out, but then there are just natural injuries that happen, and when you're playing so many consecutive games, you just, Snickers is, he's going to, you know, he's going to earn his pay this year by all of the decisions he's going to have to make in such a condensed amount of time.
I just hope we get that first game, man.
Yes, like, absolutely.
Let's just get that first game in, and then let's kind of worry about the rest of it. That's kind of my mentality right now.
We did have something from the Batter Up podcast mailbag. We have the first entry in here in the mailbag. This is for Joe. Do you think Newcomb will be in the rotation? Also, you think Riley will now play every day? We kind of hit on this a little bit earlier, but just to re-emphasize it, Joe, I believe that we are kind of the consensus that both those things are going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely think those things will happen. And again, I think Riley will play every day, but I think Riley's going to be one of those guys. I think he'll play most days. He'll get some days off. Everybody will, but... yeah, I think he's going to have to adjust to be playing some different positions this year. I just don't see a way that he's just going to be locked into either third base or left field or wherever it is.
Before we do get out of here, because I know we are getting close to running out of time, or maybe we've passed it, who knows. One thing I did want to mention is the fact of, I think something that Sean Doolittle, relief pitcher for the Nationals this past week, he said something so profound that I think it's one of those we need to give more attention to, and he's said a lot of profound things recently, but the one this past week was, sports are like the reward of a functioning society, and we're trying to just bring it back, even though we've taken none of the steps to flatten the curve, whatever you want to say. We did flatten the curve a little bit, but we didn't use that time to do anything productive. We just opened back up for Memorial Day. But that first part, I think, is so important. The sports are like the reward of a functioning society. So, people who want baseball back, please help in the work that we need to get baseball to come back. To have these guys feel comfortable to want to play is everybody essentially doing their part.
I think that's a good way to end. If you do have questions for us for our Batter Up podcast mailbag, you can find us on Twitter. I am at Willie P Style. Joe Patrick is at JAPatrick200. Caleb is at ATLJohnson18. Make sure to download the Batter Up podcast on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week as we continue to count you down to the start of the Braves season, which is July the 24th, when they head to New York to take on the New York Mets. For Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, I'm Willie P saying thanks for listening to Batter Up, a radio.com and 92.9 The Game exclusive.